Today is Friday, July 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, protesters in Hong Kong took their cause to one of the busiest airports in the world. North Korea issues a statement after Thursday's missile launch, and Australia says it will set up the world's first office dedicated to policing Facebook and Google, part of reforms designed to rein in the U.S. technology giants. Those stories and more are all ahead on today's International Edition. Protesters in Hong Kong on Friday took their cause to one of the busiest airports in the world. Demonstrators dressed in black filled the arrival hall at Hong Kong's International Airport, where they greeted international visitors carrying banners reading "Free Hong Kong." One of the protest organizers, Andy Ho, spoke to reporters.
The main goal for us is to let more people around the world know what's actually happening in Hong Kong in recent months and what Hong Kong doesn't look like from before.
Hong Kong residents have been protesting for more than a month, calling for democratic reforms and the withdrawal of a controversial extradition bill in the Chinese territory. Their demands include direct elections, the dissolution of the current legislature, and an investigation into alleged police brutality. Now for more on these protests and what's next for Hong Kong, I earlier spoke with reporter Laurel Chor. I began our conversation by asking why the airport was chosen as the protest site today.
They are trying to target international travelers. They are trying to get the message out to the world. They're trying to show the Hong Kong government that they will cause a nuisance, not just here, but all over the world. And we've seen them do that also in how they've taken out full-page ads in Western newspapers all over the world. And I think they have another set of ads coming out soon. So there's no specific reason it happened today, but they are just trying to escalate the protest and show that they're not backing down.
Does that seem to be their next tact of action in terms of taking this message outside of just the local Hong Kong area? We saw them do protests at the MRT station. Now they're at the airport. Does this seem to be how they're going to move forward, trying to get their message out?
It seems like it. They are trying to instill this constant culture of disobedience, basically. And because of the decentralized nature of the protest, there's no clear leader. And a lot of it's organized online and sort of crowdsourced, if you will. So people just sort of almost spontaneously or only a few days in advance organize these protests and try to basically show that they're here to cause an inconvenience, to make to send a message to the government that they're not backing down, whether it's, you know, stopping trains by sitting in the doorway during rush hour or going to the airport on a Friday or having different protests in different neighborhoods on different days. I think the protests are constantly evolving. These are extremely tech-savvy young protesters who are constantly coming up with new ways to spread the message, not just around Hong Kong, but around the world. So I think we can expect the unexpected. I think we'll see they are really redefining protests and coming up with new ways to protest and express their discontent, whether it's, you know, older people writing on a post-it and putting that on a wall in a public space, or young people resorting to more violent means because they feel like they're desperate.
In terms of protests, these have been going on for well over a month now. We're entering the weekend. Do they have any events that you know of that are scheduled to take place either Saturday or Sunday?
Tomorrow is going to be a big day. Tomorrow, tens of thousands of people are expected to go march in Yuen Long. Yuen Long is the neighborhood where last Sunday there were vicious attacks by masked gangsters and who went around attacking innocent bystanders, protesters, even journalists. So the protest tomorrow is in response to those attacks, in response to the perception that the police did not do enough So there's been a lot of anger this week over those incidents. So that's why tomorrow we're expecting the protests to be quite intense, especially because the police did not approve the protest. Now, for the last few big marches, usually the organizers have to ask for a letter of no objection from the police, and this time the police did not issue that letter. In fact, they issued an objection. So the protest will be, from the get-go, illegal.
And that was journalist Laurel Chor speaking to me from Hong Kong. North Korea has formally announced its latest ballistic missile test, saying that the launch was a warning to military warmongers in South Korea who are set to soon hold joint military exercises with the United States. We have more from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
North Korean state media showed pictures of Kim Jong-un personally supervising the Thursday test of what it called a new type tactical guided weapon. U.S. and South Korean officials say the projectile was a short-range ballistic missile. The official Korean Central News Agency said the test was meant to send a solemn warning to what it called the South Korean military warmongers. North Korea has repeatedly complained about South Korea's recent acquisition of U.S. F-35 fighter jets, as well as upcoming U.S.-South Korea joint military exercises. Pyongyang has warned it may not resume working-level talks with the United States if the drills take place. South Korea's National Security Council expressed strong concern about the launch, which it determined was a new type of short-range ballistic missile. The test raises further doubts about working-level nuclear talks, which were supposed to resume shortly after last month's meeting between Kim and U.S. President Donald Trump at the demilitarized zone separating the two Koreas. In an interview with the U.S. cable television network Fox News, Trump downplayed the importance of the missile test. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told the TV network he still believes negotiations will start in just a handful of weeks. North Korea wants the United States to provide security guarantees and relax sanctions in exchange for partial steps to dismantle its nuclear program. The United States has insisted it will not ease sanctions unless Pyongyang commits to totally abandoning its nuclear program. North Korea has given the United States until the end of the year to change its approach to the talks. Trump insists he's in no hurry to reach a deal, insisting his friendship with Kim will eventually convince the young North Korean leader to give up his nuclear weapons. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
The UN human rights chief says the Syrian government and its allies have continued a relentless campaign against civilians in northwestern Syria, amid what she termed a collective shrug by the international community to the escalating violence. A Syrian government military offensive backed by Russian air power began April 30th against the last major rebel stronghold, home to 3 million people. More than 440,000 have been displaced by the violence. The office of Michelle Bachelet said in the past 10 days alone, at least 103 civilians, including 26 children, were killed. Bachelet said Friday that the world's most powerful nations are failing to lead in dealing with the Syrian crisis, saying, quote, resulting in a tragedy on such a vast scale that we no longer seem to be able to relate to it at all, end quote. Here are some other major stories from around the globe. The prospects of U.S. Democratic lawmakers impeaching President Donald Trump appears to have significantly diminished after former special counsel Robert Mueller offered no new explosive allegations during testimony this week. A U.S. military official says Iran has test-fired a medium-range missile, further escalating tensions in the Persian Gulf region. U.S. officials are cracking down on what appears to be a human smuggling operation allegedly involving Marines in Southern California. Officials state they've arrested 16 Marines. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOANews.com website and with our VOA mobile application. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute. In 1998, when Sterling Nesbitt was a 16-year-old high school junior, he took part in a dig expedition in New Mexico's Zuni Basin. During that dig, the budding young paleontologist found a unique and nearly complete skeletal fossil. Today, Nesbitt is now a paleontologist and an assistant professor at Virginia Tech. Nesbitt and his colleagues have recently determined that the fossil he had dug up over 20 years ago is actually an early and tiny relative of the mighty Tyrannosaurus rex. The scientists have determined that the dinosaur they name Susquehannas hazeleye stood nearly a meter high at its hips and was about 3 meters in length and weighed between 21 and 41 kilograms. Despite its diminutive size, Susquehannas hazeleye is said to have been much like its bigger cousin, a ferocious carnivore that ate a diet of small animals. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson told German Chancellor Angela Merkel on Friday that the only way to reach a deal on Brexit is to abolish the so-called Irish backstop, a spokesman for Johnson said. The Irish Prime Minister responded to the statement, saying that that would be the same as a no-deal Brexit. In addition, the European Union's budget commissioner is also warning that a failure by Britain to pay its divorce bill as it leaves the bloc could threaten the country's credit status. Johnson is vowing to take Britain out of the EU by October 31st, with or without a deal. He has threatened to withhold a payment of $49 billion as part of the Brexit divorce bill that predecessor Theresa May agreed to if there was no deal. Australia says it has set up the world's first office dedicated to policing Facebook and Google, part of reforms designed to rein in the U.S. technology giants. Reuters reporter Eve Johnson has that story.
Australia is tightening the screws on U.S. tech giants. It announced Friday it will set up an office dedicated to policing Facebook and Google, the first of its kind in the world. Curbing the power of big tech has become a hot topic in recent months, with the U.S. and Europe scrambling to deal with antitrust issues, the spread of fake news, and hate speech. Facebook has recently been slapped with a $5 billion fine in the U.S. for privacy breaches, a sign that regulators are finally taking the problem seriously, according to Australia's treasurer.
Make no mistake, these companies are among the most powerful and valuable in the world. And they need to be held to account, and their activities need to be more transparent.
The new office will be part of the ACCC, Australia's antitrust watchdog. It's one of many recommendations made by the watchdog to protect consumers after studying Facebook and Google for 18 months. The new office will be tasked, in part, with shedding light on how the two firms use algorithms to profit from their users' data.
One of the purposes behind this new ACCC branch is to actually better understand the use of these algorithms to ensure that they're not being used for misleading or deceptive or anti-competitive conduct.
The ACCC report made 23 recommendations in all, including strengthening privacy laws and putting protections in place for the news media. But they won't become law just yet. The government will put them to the public for discussion before Australia decides how and when to act.
And that was Reuters reporter Eve Johnson. U.S. President Donald Trump is expressing displeasure at Sweden over the case of an American rapper. AP Entertainment editor Oscar Wells Gabriel has the details.
He tried pulling some diplomatic strings to get ASAP Rocky free, but now that Swedish officials have charged the rapper with assault, President Donald Trump is pulling no punches. He says he's disappointed that the Prime Minister of Sweden was not able to act on his request to let Rocky go. In a series of tweets, Trump said putting the rapper on trial has let down the U.S. African-American community. This coming as Trump himself is under fire in many quarters for telling a group of U.S. congresswomen that they should go back from where they came. Trump was urged by Kanye West and his wife Kim Kardashian West to use his influence to get ASAP Rocky free. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
Sweden has dismissed President Trump's tweets, saying that the country's judicial system was independent of any political interference. More than 100 are missing and feared dead after a wooden boat carrying about 250 migrants to Europe capsized off the coast of Libya, an incident that the UNHCR is calling the worst Mediterranean shipwreck of its kind this year. With more, Reuters reporter Jason Albano.
These are the survivors of what the UN is calling the worst shipwreck of its kind this year. A wooden boat carrying more than 200 migrants capsized off of Libya's coast on Thursday. A Libyan Navy official said that 134 people were rescued. But for one survivor, all hopes of a better life in Europe were quickly lost.
I lost my 7-year-old child because they don't help us. They do not help migrants. I don't want anything now except to go back to my country, Sudan, to die there.
Libya is a popular departure point for migrants bound for Europe, but the voyage is treacherous. A UN spokesman said that more than 600 migrants have already lost their lives this year. He also said that the survivors would likely be brought to detention centers in Libya, where, according to rights groups in the UN, thousands of migrants are held in inhumane conditions.
And that was Reuters' Jason Albano, and you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
The Science Edition of Press Conference USA celebrates the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing, considered one of the greatest achievements in human history. NASA's chief historian William Barry joins host Rick Pantaleo to discuss how the space agency was able to meet President John F. Kennedy's challenge of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to Earth before the end of the 1960s. Listen Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. The economic and political turmoil in Venezuela continues, despite international efforts to support interim president Juan Guaido against strongman Nicolas Maduro. Host Carol Castiel discusses the Venezuela turmoil with Eric Farnsworth, vice president of the Council of the Americas and the America Society, and Mark Feierstein, former National Security Council director of Western Hemisphere Affairs. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Encounter.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. The Me Too movement has exposed how powerful public figures use sexual harassment against the less powerful. But underreported is how international students in the United States deal with harassment on school campuses. Students from some cultures might face a higher risk because they have been taught not to challenge authority or create conflict. VOA's Kathleen Strzok talked with graduate student Althea Rao from China, who uses her art to express how she coped with sexual harassment and is helping to educate others.
Althea Rao engages others with art to bring a difficult subject to light, sexual harassment. It's something the Chinese artist says she experienced while she studied in the U.S. on a student visa.
I had a very unpleasant experience with sexual harassment with a faculty member when I was at school, and then the investigation decided that there was no evidence or the evidence was not enough to prove that anything like really policy was violated. And then my professor ended up retaliating against me.
She's now an artist in residence at the Art Space New Haven in the state of Connecticut. Althea uses her work to highlight the problem, and she calls herself a cultural facilitator.
We touch, we create, we heal.
Her artwork includes film and video, but she focuses on light sculpture. She asks people to write secrets and declarations on a piece of paper, which she pastes together into the light sculpture. She says it gives a voice to those who have been silenced.
Listening and having an open mind before judging is really important. In China, there's a lot of, in the past, people would say, oh, you are so sensitive. You shouldn't have this feeling. This is normal.
Experts say many foreign students are reluctant to report sexual harassment.
And we know a lot of folks aren't reporting because they're concerned that they might not be believed or that they'll be blamed for the assault or what happened to them. So if they are concerned or anticipate that they might have a negative response either from the university or from the legal system, that might jeopardize their status here in the country, that oftentimes can be a barrier for students reporting.
Rao says it's important for men to engage in the conversation too.
Gender equality is equality about all human beings, and we share space. So it's not about one side dominating the other. And I'm trying to find a way to make more men to understand that they should be part of this, and if we want to find a win-win situation, then they need to be part of this, and they urgently need to be part of this.
Rao said she believes before the Me Too generation, women survived by going along to get along or acquiescing, but that's changing.
Earlier generations of women, they all decided, were not decided, they just admitted that, okay, this is the dynamic in order for me to excel, to survive. The younger generation of women, they started to say that we don't like the system. We don't think the system is okay. This is not okay.
Rao says her generation needs to push the edges of conventional conversation to include all voices about difficult topics. And art, she says, is an excellent vehicle for those conversations. Kathleen Strzok, VOA News, Washington.
Cyberbullying continues to be an issue for kids and teens in the United States, especially girls. The AP's Matt Small has more.
There's a rise in cyberbullying nationwide, with three times as many girls reporting being harassed online or by text message than boys. This according to the latest survey by the National Center for Education Statistics, which is the research and data arm of the Education Department. The NCES survey says during the 2 years between the 2014-15 school year and the 2016-17 school year, cyberbullying jumped from 11.5% to 15.3%, with 21% of girls reporting it compared with less than 7% of boys. Matt Small, Washington.
If it's July, it must be time for a couple of championship races that, well, typically, they just don't make the headlines. But as VOA's Faith Lapidus reports, that doesn't really matter to the contestants.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go! This was the final sprint of the annual Diaper Derby, held in the lobby of a Midtown Manhattan hotel. The championship round brought together the winners of the earlier heats across the 3.7-meter-long course. Lucas Ho's parents were justifiably proud of their 14-month-old champion.
He was a late bloomer starting to crawl, but usually he would come to food, so we just put food in front of him and he'll just run straight to us. So it worked today. Blueberries did the trick.
Yeah, he's a hungry little bub.
The Diaper Derby is sponsored by Lifetime Tribe, which hosts triathlon events around the United States.
This is a game of manipulation. The parents are dangling something, hoping to encourage the kids to crawl across the mat. Keys, cell phones, their favorite food, whatever it is.
The incentives don't always work. During the preliminary heats, some contestants wandered off. Others just plopped down and cried.
It is a slow race, right? This is the slowest 2 minutes in sport.
Maybe not.
Ready, steady, slow!
Because there's the annual World Championship Snail Race, held since the 1960s in Congham in the English county of Norfolk. The snails race, or slither, across a damp cloth spread out on a table, marked with three circles. The first one to reach the outer circle wins. Urged on by the exuberant crowd, some competitors tried to cheat. Some went the wrong way, and others held steady. But it was a nail-biter of a finish, and it's Sammy the Snail by an antenna.
I mean, I always believed he had it in him from the moment I met him earlier today. It's not what I expected to do with my Saturday, but, you know, really it's perhaps a new career for me in snail racing. Snail championships
which prove that slow and steady can win the race. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And taking a quick look back in time, it was on this date in 1856. Playwright George Bernard Shaw was born in Dublin, Ireland. Now, Shaw's work, Pygmalion, served as the basis for the Broadway musical My Fair Lady. And in 1948, Mick Jagger, the frontman for the Rolling Stones, was born in Dartford, England. And with that, that's going to do it for me today. On behalf of our director, Dan Brown, engineer Nick Ivanoff, and managing editor Kate Pound Dawson, thank you so much for joining us. Now for pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow VOA on social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, with our VOA mobile app, you can download our stories and take them with you anytime, day or night. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a fantastic Friday and an amazing weekend.